You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
A club isn't the best place to find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends.
So Mike didn't have enough hate in his life, so he arbitrarily went out and he started watching Katie Couric, quote unquote, journalism. How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, Katie Couric, the journalist. But no, I didn't mean to watch it. I was scrolling through the channels, and it was on.
And
I'm watching it. Well, then I'm watching it, and of course it's, you know, the one side of journalism that shows the hate and the separation in America. And it's all focused on, you know, people that are proud. She was going after the people that were trying to protect Confederate statues.
Right.
You know, and then of course she's showing the side of, you know, all these people saying it's a symbolism of hate and racism in America. And,
right.
You know, and making all the other people look like complete fools, like racists and, you know, all sorts of shit.
Right.
Yeah, it just pissed me off.
Right. You know, it's an interesting subject if you can, if you can treat it intellectually, but most
that's the problem, Mac.
Can't treat it intellectually, so, right?
Yeah, you need to be an intellectual to start looking at things intellectually. You got to separate emotion from fact.
But isn't that what isn't that what reporters and news people are supposed to do?
Well, yeah, in a perfect world, yeah.
I guess, but again, what is Katie Couric? She's at this point a video columnist. She's not a news person. So a columnist like Maureen Dowd, Pat Buchanan's a columnist. They write columns and they have a certain intellectual bias, and that's what they do. She's not a news person, Katie Couric, anymore.
No.
She's a columnist. She's an entertainer.
Right. It's her view that she's trying to get across.
Right. So, yeah, I don't, why would you waste your time with that? How long did you watch it before you said,
10 minutes.
Oh, good. All right. So you don't watch the whole thing.
10 minutes too long. Yeah.
Right. Because to me, the truly interesting part of the whole statue debate is look, don't take them down, build it out, you know? Talk about slavery in our community. That, yeah, after the war, in order to bind our wounds, these monuments went up to people that fought for the Confederacy, right? And let us paint a picture for you how slavery affected our county. On the corner of Elm and Sycamore Street, well, it'd be Elm and Fifth because Sycamore would run parallel to Elm because there are trees, and that would be the naming convention for the streets. But you know what I'm saying? In that building, there was approximately 15,000 black people from both Africa and Latin America sold into slavery by people of this county. What? So you tell the complete story, the good and the bad. You don't hide it. And so to me, that's compelling journalism, and it would be worth watching, but not what...
What we're about today.
Yeah. All right, what else is going on? What else is on your mind? What have you been doing? What'd you do on your day off?
I went to lunch with the guys.
All right. Where at? Petroleum Club? Where'd you go?
No, we went to a barbecue place.
Oh, really? What'd you have?
I had a barbecued or chopped beef sandwich.
Chopped beef
and brisket. Yeah.
Right. That's good. The, and then do anything else exciting? You had your admin day on Monday. And then you were working on other stuff. So, what were you working on?
Oh, just getting ready. We're gonna plant some shrubbery in the around the house.
Are you going to plant it, or are you going to hire somebody? Because you're kind of a well-to-do guy in Granbury.
I'm gonna do it.
You are?
But it's just dig a hole and put a plant in there, so it's not that hard.
Your inner farmer coming out?
Yeah, we'll see. Halfway in, I'll be pissed at myself that I didn't get someone to do this.
Dig a hole. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, no problem. I'll take that tree out. That's a mistake you make once in your life. Okay? Taking a tree out. Trees go down thousands of feet. By the time you're done digging, you've got a hole that you could put the Empire State Building in. And it is not. And you're looking at yourself going, well, look, I've done it this far. It can't be that much more. Now you've got dynamite,
right,
axes, chainsaws. You got neighbors down there. You're having formations.
Right.
You're having formations in the hole. You're like, what the shit?
Cratering charges, yeah.
Exactly. You do that one friggin' time. So did you grow up doing gardening? Did you get out in the yard with your dad? And was that like something the Musselmans did? No.
No. No, not at all. But now, you know, I don't know. It's just, like I said, it seems like when you think about it, it seems like, oh, you know what? It's not a big deal. It's relaxing.
No.
Once you undertake it, yeah. Because we're going to remove all the mulch from the flower bed, the beds in the front and the back.
Okay.
Put in new mulch.
Yeah, I got to. It'll look nice.
Yeah.
And
it'll look real nice.
It's not too expensive, and it makes the house look nicer, so I'm good with that. What's next?
Well, then, once I remove all the mulch, then comes down, then I plant the shrubs that we're going to put in, and then I put the weed barrier in, then put the new mulch on top.
What's weed barrier? What's that?
It's that plastic... That plastic stuff that goes down inside of a garden or a flower bed to keep weeds from penetrating.
I didn't know if it was something else.
No. But like I said, now that you're making me think about it more, it's like, oh, do I really want to do this?
Do you want to do it?
Sure. I'll undertake it.
So are you going to have phase lines and say, okay, I'm at phase this, that I can shut it down and bring in the professionals if I have to? Do you have that? Is that in your head, or you'll just see how it goes?
No, I'll accomplish it. I'm stubborn. I'm that way.
Oh, there you go.
I'll get it done.
I like that. I like that. I did, yeah. I think I told you, I went to war with a sprinkler not too long ago. And I wound up digging up this giant hole around the sprinkler. But it had to be done because it was a small crack in those kind of flexible black screw-in little pieces of, I don't know if you call them pipe, but they come out of the PVC pipe, you know, threaded area, and then they go up to the sprinkler head. And that had a small crack in it that was soaking a corner of the lawn to the point, and it was just a constant, right, slow drip, but it was, the lawn was saturated and the water was beginning to run over on the concrete. And I, you know, at that point it catches my eye and I'm like, what is that? Where is that coming from?
Right.
And so by the time I put enough back work into it, amazing, giant hole. Then I had to leave it. I had to leave it like that for a while because I had to make sure that there was no fresh water coming into it. And so then I had jars out there because after I dug the hole, because the water was set, the ground was saturated, the water would just run in and fill up the hole. And I'm like, is that coming from the pipe? Or is that coming from another crack? Maybe something I didn't see. So then I had to let the water settle. And if there was no turbulence in the water, then I knew that it was not coming from the pipe. So I'm a bit of a farmer, a bit of a water specialist, all rolled into one. And it sounds like you're going down that road. I'm fired up to hear about it.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. All right. What else?
I'll let you know how it goes.
Did you watch any of Mark Zuckerberg's testimony?
No.
Yeah, I watched a little bit. I watched a little bit on the news. Facebook?
No.
Facebook? Kind of bullshit, if you ask me. Somebody needs...
Yes.
I think consumers need some kind of online rights, and we need to get over the whole internet thing. They need to start paying taxes like everybody else pays, blah, 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 blah. So we need to stop foregoing, both the states and the federal government need to stop foregoing revenue just because you're an internet person without a headquarters in my state. You're doing business in my state, you're paying for it. All right, email question.
Well, the problem is they're just going to pass that on to us, so.
Yeah, but that's fine. Everybody else, we pay taxes on everything. Why? Because it's over the internet. Should somebody not pay a tax? It's not fair to other retailers who have to collect that tax. So that's my point.
Right.
Level playing field. I don't want to hear about this. I believe in free trade. Yeah, well, it ain't free, jackass. Email. Mac, you played that Jeremiah Workman interview yesterday. Gunner have any more thoughts? Gunner have any more contact with him? I listened to the whole thing and heard you post and discuss the letters that you'd received from that Marine and his mom, which I thought were very, very cool. It's amazing now that you guys are going into the third year of doing this. I'm curious, though, if Mike has any other thoughts on that interview or Jeremiah's story. So... yeah, Mike was the catalyst for that interview, which is still one of the best interviews I've ever been a part of, and it's his story. I certainly just get out of the way as he tells it. Mike, any other thoughts about
right.
that?
Right. The true story is, I mean, really, it's the, you know, I think you captured it in a comment where he said that, you know, it was the war, it was the battle that he took back with him.
Right.
That he was successful, you know, and not even the Navy Cross, you know, is awarded for that kind of bravery that he had to go through when he got back. So, you know, he's doing great things. So, you know, I wish him the best.
Yeah. No, I in listening to it all yesterday, it's a story that a lot of guys fight, and most recently, Luke, and those emails, and I forward them to Mike. I can't tell you what that does, though, you know, to, you know, you're having whatever day you're having, and all of a sudden that bombs into your inbox. And
right.
somebody says, the things I've heard you guys say have affected me deeply, and they're changing my life. I feel a part of this that, and Luke tells, I mean, something that, you know, Mike and I say that, you know, nobody gave you post-traumatic stress. You earned that shit in combat, man. You're part of a warrior tribe. You're part of us. And, you know, and that goes to peer-to-peer help and a lot of it that you can't get from a counselor that's never had that experience. But you can get it from us, though, because, you know, we know.
Here's the thing. That's kind of in the epidemic across America right now that I'm seeing. And not only in veterans, but, you know, in everybody that now is starting these organizations for post-traumatic stress. And like I said, I don't like using the word disorder because it's not really a disorder. But the problem really comes into it is the, you know, the woe is me.
Right.
And a lot of that, you know, you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. I, like you said, I've looked at it from the perspective of, hey, I earned that shit, man. That's the badge that I wear and I carry honorably with me. You know, that's something, that's the fight that I gotta fight now. And that's, you know, I earned that. That's something I, like I said, I wear proudly. And, I'm not a victim. Don't victimize me. I'm not. You know, I chose that path. And so, you know, what I get tired of is this, you know, woe, oh, you poor thing. Oh, you must be so hard, you know. And then there's the handout. It's the stuff that the immediate gratification of that, you know. No. You know, change your mindset. Like you said, wear it honorably. It's a badge of honor. Yeah.
Mike, do you, I think there's two important gates that somebody who begins to deal with post-traumatic stress, and I'm not even talking about military people. You talk about cops. You can talk about victims of domestic violence, victims of, you know, of criminal violence. You can talk about people that are involved in near-death experiences with cancer, with car accidents, things like that. All suffer from that. One is I think it's important for military guys. Look, we didn't corner the market on this shit. And get your shit together and help other people that are dealing with it. Because it isn't a disability. It's something that you can learn to live with and have a full life. And again, I'm fortunate in that I've had other guys, Marines, make a huge difference in my life and teach me about it. Mike's one of them. You know, Mike's the one that turned me on to Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah.
And if there's ever the poster,
that's the
poster
first,
child.
The poster child. Yeah.
For fuck it, I'm out, is Elizabeth Smart. She didn't sign up for it. She didn't go looking for it. None of it. It came to her in her bedroom and yanked her out of it. But if Elizabeth Smart can do it, right, the rest of us can do our part. So to me, the one thing is, one kind of realization is, you didn't corner the market on this. You're nothing special. There's a whole lot of people that deal with this. And guess what? You can do it, and you can live a good life. And then two, now that you know that, right, kind of do what you need to get your act together and get your hands around, and then go help somebody else. Because, Mike, how big of a difference do you think it makes in your life once you help other people?
Oh, it's huge. Because then that, you know, that goes forward, and then they go out and change somebody else's life, and then it's a domino effect.
Right. But the woe is me thing is a hard one. And I think one of the things that contributes to it is structural flaws in human beings before they get there. Some people have those structural flaws, and then you load a lot more stress on them, and they're imploding. Their structure's failing.
Right.
I think you see a lot of those people, you know, that can't get out of that and need a lot of help. And I think it's those structural flaws that we don't really talk about. A lot of them are invisible that you don't really know about. And I think that's difficult. But I think the vast majority of people are capable of dealing with this. As you said, I'm not a victim, man. And this, as Elizabeth Smart says, right, this isn't a period at the end of the sentence. You can live a great life, right? And you got to get after it. And so to me, and that's the coolest part of Jeremiah's story, is one, I think it's illuminating for a lot of people to pull the curtain back and to hear him struggle. Here he's held up in our culture by virtue of this Navy cross that he's received. This is an example of what we want. This is an example of valor and courage in combat. Right, so that's the public face of it. When you drop that face, behind it, what you see is a young man who's struggling with the guilt he feels that he didn't get there fast enough, and his failure in that regard contributed to the death of three of his Marines. And so you pull the curtain back, and people get to see how difficult it is for people that have been in those situations and dealt with that to come home and then become a celebrity for it.
Right.
Oh, my God. And you listen to his story. And it just, at one point in the interview, I keep asking, like, questions, but I don't exactly say it like, okay, so we're still drinking as much? Expecting him to say, no, you know, I'd kind of turned the corner. And he doesn't say that. He says, yeah, I was drinking more than ever when I wrote that book. And you're like, shit, man, well, how does this get better? And it gets better when Sergeant Major Kent, and it's funny.
Listen, he intervenes.
Yeah, he gets involved. And he gets involved because of another friend of ours. I don't know if Mike knows him. Do you know Boomer Milstead? General Milstead?
Yeah, I know Boomer.
Boomer sees Jeremiah at the National Museum of the Marine Corps essentially being Joe Louis, right? He's working there with his Navy Cross and talking to people, and he hates it. And Milstead says, what are you doing here? And Morton says something like, I'm guarding this dog because people pet it and its fur falls off. And Milstead looks at him and says, are you shitting me? So what do you do here? I hang out here. I've been wounded war battalion. And then Milstead says, do you like, is it? And he says, no, I don't like it, sir. I hate it. So Milstead talks to, I think, Amos is the assistant commandant and Kent's sergeant major. And he says, hey, we got to get him out of there. And that's how he meets Kent. And it's this very cool. It's people in, and Mike talked about it in the interview. And so I played the interview you and I did that day after his interview. And you said a couple things that I won't forget. One is that how you resisted sending guys like Jeremiah, and people tried to push back on orders to send these guys to the drill field because they weren't healed yet.
Right.
Talk about that, Mike. So how did that get on your horizon? Was it Jeremiah? Was it he and other Marines that were going to go from that combat experience down to the craziness of the drill field?
You see this. Well, and anywhere. I mean, it came back to, you know, we're willing to separate these guys, get them out of the group that's holding their shit together, and send them out to somewhere else that these people don't know, you know, for Adam, who they are. And it was just like, it didn't even make sense, but yet people were, well, it's the thing we got to do. You know, the guys got orders, you know, intervene.
Yeah.
I
can just hear Mike.
Step up, be the leader.
Yeah. I can just hear Mike. Who do I need to call? Get me his number right now. And because you've done it in your life, if you explain it to them, you know what they'll say? Oh shit. I didn't know that. You're right. Nobody mentioned that. Yeah.
I fought with it with the other guys too.
And then the other, so what were you? Were you 3-5's gunner at the time?
Yeah.
You had just got there, right? You had come back from Iraq in 2004 and gone to 3-5 in 2005?
No, in 2004.
But you were in Iraq in 2004. With the regiment.
It's kind of complicated. So the guy who was the regimental gunner, because I didn't get to 3-5 in time, he deployed with 3-5. So I took his spot at 5th Marine.
Got it.
So we switched in country, and then I came back with 3-5.
Oh, wow. Okay, so right. So they redeployed, what, January, February of 2005?
So 2000, let me do this now. So 2003, we invaded. 2004,
Stu Navarre. Jerry Duran.
So I was in Ramadi and Fallujah during that whole thing. And then, 3-5 left. We left Iraq like in the spring, April.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And then we left in 2005, and then I redeployed with 3-5 in November, December of 2005.
Okay, got it. We
were only home for like 6 months, left, you know.
And that was typical at the time.
And we were gone again.
For a lot of units.
Yeah.
The other funny thing is you and I both laugh, but when we're talking, is you talk about your respect for Sergeant Major Kent. And I say, you made a comment like, he's the real deal. And I said, holy smokes, that's coming from a guy who's not afraid to get after senior staff NCOs. And you start, And you start laughing, and you say,
Kent was as good as they get. You know, here's a guy who was not afraid to use his position, his rank, his authority, his influence to do the right thing in the case of, you know, a lot of people. He, where other people were more career oriented, Kent was, he was focused on the Marines. And so when things got to Kent's level, he fixed them. You know, he didn't sit there and was never a problem admirer. He couldn't stand for that kind of stuff. He fixed things, where he could do good. So that was, it was fantastic to have a guy like that around.
The Marine Corps is fun when you work with guys like that because it makes sense. Up is up, down is down, and you don't get that, well, because so-and-so said, or I don't want to rock the boat, or, you know, you get this, who said that? So-and-so. Okay,
all right.
Give me his number. Hey, do you know this? Yeah, I figured you didn't. Okay, how about let's do this then? Got it. All right, thanks. I'll have him call you. Boom. And then they look at you and like, it's done. That's all. Why don't we have more people like that? Why don't we have more people? Because they don't want to rock the boat, shit like that. It makes you crazy at times. Hey, what?
I did watch a great show yesterday.
What, the Yankee Red Sox game when the Yankees just beat the shit out of them?
Winning by 3 points, Mike, is not getting the shit beat out of you. Winning by 14-1, now that's getting your shit pushed in.
And the fight, the Red Sox got shoved back in their dugout. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and like I said in my text message here, what great ambassadors, because that's what New York stands for. They're a bunch of freaking thugs, criminals, man.
Thugs. Hey, when you're a little guy, the fight starts. Run, Forrest, run. Okay. Tell me the TV show. Rubber game of the match today at 4:00.
You gotta watch it.
Okay.
All right. Well, first I'm going to start with a quote.
Okay.
This is a quote from her.
Oh.
And she wrote this. I feel the beauty of nature and the goodness of people around me. Every day I think what a fascinating and amusement adventure this is. With all of that, why should I despair?
Why should I what?
Despair.
Despair.
Yeah.
Mother Teresa.
No. Anne Frank, age 14. And she wrote that May 3rd, 1944, when she was in a concentration camp in Auschwitz.
How do you know? How'd they find that? Where'd she write it?
She wrote it in her diaries.
I didn't know they found
So I started reading again the Anne Frank diaries. And it is... She started writing this stuff when she was six. And she was a German Jew, lived in Frankfurt. Her father took her family to Amsterdam, to Holland,
right,
where they hid from the Nazis. And then when Holland fell in the early 40s, became over German rule, they stayed in hiding. And then it wasn't until 1944 that she was actually the Germans came for her and her family and then put them on a train and they went to Auschwitz. Birkenau and Auschwitz,
right.
So Birkenau is the death camp. Auschwitz was the labor. Auschwitz wasn't the death camp. People did die at Auschwitz. They weren't exterminated. They were exterminated right across basically the street at Birkenau. And she lived through all of that. She made it through that. Now she's about 14, 15 years old. And then they transferred her to Beslin. And at Beslin is where her and Margot died. She succumbed to typhus just weeks before they were liberated by the British. You know, the camp was liberated by the British. So, I mean, she literally passed away maybe 10 to 12 days before the British got there.
Ugh.
But here's... You read these things that she wrote. What an amazing young lady. And this reminded me a lot of this whole Elizabeth Smart thing. She never wrote as if she was a victim. She wrote about the beauty of people and the goodness of life. And, you know, this whole thing, and it's heartbreaking to think that what she could have become, what she could have added into this world, and what she would have been as an inspiration of people to come out of something like this. But unfortunately, she lost her battle. But it's fascinating to find out how they go through the whole story. I mean, everything, her whole life, and how her diary actually was found, kept, and then after the war, then turned over to the only person that lived through her family was her father, Otto. Otto Frank, who lived to be 80-something years old, 89 years old, and actually published her daughter Anne Frank's diary in the early 40s, or in the mid-40s, after the war. And all of this, you know, came out. And so we see the life of a young woman, a Jewish woman, being persecuted by the Nazis, but yet she doesn't focus in on the hate. You know, it's like, God, where does the strength of some young, where does the strength come from? So it's, you know, and it reminded me a lot, again, when I was listening to the story, a lot of, I related to that whole thing of people today that are, feel victimized because life's not fair, or this not fair, or their job's not fair. You know, it's like, shit, do you realize what people have gone before you with a lot less, but you never looked into the pit of despair? You know, are you that weak of an individual?
Yeah, I was thinking about, do you remember our discussion about who would you have sided with, Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, if you would have been a black man in the 50s and the 60s?
Yeah, it would have been easy. Martin Luther King.
Yeah, and me too. I would have believed, but I'll tell you what, I don't know if I would have stayed there. If my friends, for instance, if my friends, if you got, you know, you and I fight in World War II, we come home, we have families now, we're raising them, and all of a sudden I get a letter, hey, Mac, sorry to tell you that Mike Musselman was shot in the back running away from police from his home in Mississippi. What? And would I have continued to be peaceful? I don't know that I'm not that smart.
Yeah, I would have.
You might. No, you're smarter than me. I at some point, my attitude would have been, you know, screw this. I'm not going to keep getting slapped in the face.
Because then their death means their sacrifice, their life, that the things that they gave you meant nothing when you choose that path.
Well, you know what? Again, so, but it's, you read about these kind of struggles, right? And choices that people have to make in life about, you know, Dr. King, whose assassination we just remembered a week or so ago, and his I've been to the mountaintop speech in Memphis, going there to support the sanitation workers' rights and encouraging people, you've got to go out and protest. You have to take the time off to go do that. Right. Because and he uses the parable of the guy going from Jericho to Jerusalem, and it's the Good Samaritan, right? And he keeps referring to not what will happen to me if on this dangerous road from Jericho to Jerusalem, if I help him, what will happen to me if I don't help him? What will I become if I don't help? And so when you read history,
it's a train of thought. Your chain of thought.
It's just, are we that insulated? Are we that, I don't know, self-absorbed? You know, you and I went down this road with something really stupid that you were telling me and I didn't believe it. And I want to say it happened in a school in Kentucky or something. And you were telling me, and I'm like, I'm not believing that we are that soft and we're that ridiculous and we're that lame. And you were like, no, no, we are. we are that self-absorbed, we are that sick of a country that you know, that we don't even think, what will happen to me if I don't help? You know,
yeah.
And in a culture where the question you get asked most often is, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? What are your feelings? What are you feeling about that? Well, I don't know. It's the road to hell. It's a self-absorbed road to hell. How you feel, how everything impacts you. And it's interesting that we kind of started this discussion off with one of the key elements of living with post-traumatic stress is, one, recognizing there's a lot of people in that boat, and two, beginning to reach out and help others with what you've learned.
Yeah. You will do more for yourself if you stop worrying about the self-loathing and the self-pity, and you start reaching out and helping others deal with theirs. You will heal tremendously faster. You know, it's the Good Samaritan thing. Again, you feel much better. It's much better to give than to receive. We've all known that.
Right.
You know, it feels good in that moment that somebody gives you something, but it lasts a lifetime when you actually reach out and help somebody. You know, when you do something for somebody with no expectation of, you know, gratitude or anything, you just do it because it's the right thing to do. That lives with you forever. And that makes you a better person. And like we've always said before in the past, it helps heal the soul. You know, so again, it's this whole, like you said, I don't know, like self-absorbed pity party.
Yeah,
you know,
it's what it is. It's about
that we live in this world. Yeah,
dig me, right? And
yeah,
it's,
help yourself by helping others.
And it's not the way. It's not the better way. It's not historically the way that we have lived in our country.
No, but it's what we're coming into. It's what we're transforming into because of society. This social media network, you know, social media shit that's out there and all this other, that all adds to the self-absorbed pity party shit. Twitter, you know, low self-esteem. It targets these people with this, again, these problems, and it doesn't help correct them. All it does is give them self-gratification for minutes. But it doesn't do anything to help others.
Email.
You know,
and let me just, Mike, it's interesting that you two individuals described as ass clowns on this program all the time do say profound things. Giving of yourself is truly the way to live a great life. And hearing it in both your voices and hearing Mac read that woman's email, I cannot imagine how good both of you felt knowing you have a part in that. My grandmother, my mother, my father all preached it. If you want to feel good about yourself, give of yourself. And it will come back to you in so many different ways.
And
it's true even to this day. The richest people in town are the people that give the most, not the people that have the most.
Right.
Enjoy your program. Mac, read that email one more time for people that didn't get a chance to hear it. Hold on. I got to find it. Go ahead, Mike. You were going to say?
But you guys, you know, so it's called Anne Frank Holocaust Remembered or something. It's 2 hours long. And you walk away from that, just, oh, man, I mean, you walk away.
Wait a minute. Where did you see it?
I saw it. I'll send you the link. I saw it on, like, History Channel or something like that. But it was this whole Holocaust remembering thing. And it was truly remarkable. I mean, it was something that I haven't seen, it was, it was something that, you know, I wish I would have seen a long time ago. I will, like I said, I will find it and I'll send it to you.
All right. The because we do follow your television recommendations very closely.
So it's called The Diary of Anne Frank. It's on BBC. There's so many out there.
The Diary of Anne Frank? It's got to be called something different.
Yeah, it was called something different. It was
because that's a movie.
Yeah, it wasn't that. It was. Yeah, the other one is called Anne Frank, The Whole Story. That's a drama biography. It's a movie. It's 3 hours long. I will find it for you. Well, maybe that is it, because it's episodes. Maybe that's not it, because it's a miniseries.
What the hell?
And there's so many different shows on this.
Don't give me this.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. It's called... Da-da-da-da-da.
Yes? Come on, no, man. What is wrong with you?
I just saw the picture of it. It was... It's on...
Shit.
I know. I got my shit all screwed up today. It's right there. National Geographic. Anne Frank's Holocaust. National Geographic, Anne Frank's Holocaust.
So it's on the National Geographic channel. They do great stuff.
They do excellent stuff. And it's called Anne Frank's Holocaust. And you can actually, if you got like DirecTV or something,
yeah,
you can actually download it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to find it on YouTube TV and record.
Anne Frank's Holocaust, it came out in 2015. The guy, what was lost? You got to play this. I'm going to send you a link right now. Play this.
Did you just send it to me?
I'm sending it to you right now. You got to play this.
On this phone or a different phone?
I'm sending it to you on your...
You can
what
send
phone
it
do you want me to send it to?
It doesn't matter. Either one.
I just sent it on your personal phone.
All right. What is it? What are we going to set it up?
This is the quote from, this is one of the doctors, PhD doctors, who runs the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah.
Does all the research for him. And what he's talking about is what was lost.
What was lost in terms of?
From the Holocaust. The Holocaust.
Oh, so he's quantifying the physical loss from the Holocaust.
Yeah.
In terms of people and... All right, here it is. From Michael Musselman. This is... it's entitled Anne Frank's Holocaust, What Was Lost.
Any discussion of Anne Frank must occur on multiple levels. There's Anne Frank, the person. There is Anne Frank, the icon. There's Anne Frank as one of 6 million... Jewish victims of the Holocaust. There's Anne Frank, the child onto which we project an awful lot of our feelings with regard to the Holocaust. The world will never know what was lost and who was lost when these children were murdered. was shut down for them. And if we imagine what we lost, we might weep along with those who directly experienced this event more deeply and more humbly.
Mike, have you ever been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington?
I have.
For people that have never been, it's not. It's a little bit like It's a little bit like going to the Vietnam Memorial. It is.
I think it's worse. It's a lot worse. The difference I think of it is because the Vietnam Memorial is it's awe inspiring. It's breathtaking. The difference between the Holocaust was these were not volunteers.
I didn't feel that. But I'm with
they
you.
They were not. Yeah, they did not have a choice. These were true victims of hate. That's the problem of hate. When hate goes unchecked in the world. And the problem, you know, is the fact that people, countries knew this was going on and they were bystanders. They may have not been active participants, but to be a bystander and know this was going on and to do nothing about it is worse. And that's the, but there's a quote in there and I'll have to send it to you. That's a good one. This guy, really the power of the energy the show had, but there's one in there, Mac, that brought, I had to pause it and then take a deep breath because it was emotional to listen to. And what he was talking about was, and it was kind of off of this one where, you know, 1.5 million children were lost and the death, you know, the loss of hope and everything else. And then he talks about it as the death of a single child is, you know, unimaginable in the fact that the potential that is lost. But to lose 1.5 million children, what is actually lost is hope. You know, hope for mankind when you lose that many. And this show is, like I said, talk about, you can relate it to PTS, you can relate it to, again, the self-loathing of others. When you look at what the strength that this young lady had, you know, man, it's a powerful statement that comes across.
Yeah, you know, I felt something similar because when you leave the Vietnam Memorial, it's not in my opinion, not an uplifting. It's you keep walking down and you look, and all those names, all those panels, so huge. Every one of them their own story, and every one of them dead because of a war. That doesn't leave you anytime soon. And the Holocaust Memorial is the same way. You know, you just the things that you walk by, and now you've seen pictures of it. Now you're seeing it firsthand. The wooden shelves that inmates, I want to say at Auschwitz, slept in. They have a display of that. You walk into it, you can touch it. The suitcases full of glasses and shoes and things like that you know were left behind. It's.
The rail cars that they were so crowded that they couldn't even sit down, and they traveled in for days.
Right.
People died standing up from suffocation, or
with barbed wire over the small air openings and things like that. So it's they're both similar in that they don't leave you anytime soon. When you walk away, and then when you leave, you know, I think, or when you arrive, they hand you like a passport. And in that passport is the identity of somebody. And it tells a little bit of their story, where they were from, when they were arrested, when they were sent to a concentration camp, and whether they lived or died. And so, yeah, it's rough. Those aren't easy, but they're, again, it goes back to Mike's point. What are we becoming? What are we raising in this country? You know, self-absorbed little twits, you know, that are so consumed with themselves. And so I think that's the job of parents, to expose kids to different things and whatnot. Hey, before I let you go, let me, you have to update us on the plumbing project. How did that go?
Oh, perfect. Everything went perfect.
What was the reason for the clog? Just that nasty hair thing women do?
No, it was actually, and you have to look into this, it's the soap that we're using to wash our hands.
Oh.
Yeah, the drain looked like you'd see in those cross sections of someone that's been, you know, eating cholesterol their whole life and not supposed to be. So the pipes, you know, like an inch and a half, and then the soap is like this, I don't know, this film that's thickened the walls, and it was, the way the water could drain was only probably maybe the pea size or a soda straw. The rest was just this gook film, you know. And so it was easy to clean out. But it's the soaps. There was no other weird thing but soaps or hair care products or makeup products, you know, that women use are not designed for plumbing.
The all right, I just sent you a picture. Take a look at it. Or I sent it to everybody. To the app.
Yeah, the memorial.
Yeah. Describe that for people. This memorial just got to Camp Pendleton within the last 2 weeks. It's going to be dedicated on Memorial Day weekend of this year. It is the Vietnam Memorial, the 5th Marines Vietnam Memorial. Mike, my son Patrick had duty last night. And while he was making his rounds, he and I had talked about it, and he asked me if I knew it was there. And I said, yeah, I've seen pictures of it. It's beautiful. And he said, I walked by it on my way to PX, and I saw it for the first time. And he said, Dad, holy smokes. So he's out making his rounds last night, and he took a picture. Mike, describe the picture.
Well, it's, you can't really describe it. I mean, it's just, I'm still looking at it. I have to get a good picture. But it's a tablet that goes around. It looks kind of, when you first sent it, it looked like almost like a wall. But.
Kind of is.
It's like a black granite marble with inscriptions of names. With the unit crest above, I can make out, I can see, well, there's 3-5 to the right of the, but each of the people lost within the respective battalions that were underneath 5th Marines during Vietnam. And the centerpiece is, 1st Marine Division, the 5th Marines, and then some writing I can't read. The black monolith that has, the soldier's cross, the Marine's cross. You know, the pair of boots with the rifle and the helmet on top.
Right.
Symbolize a fallen soldier, Marine.
And it's taken at night, and there's lighting coming out of the walkway, and there's benches there. And I just want to say, this is testament to this thing that we all joined. These Marines, 47 years after most of them were in Vietnam, approximately, raised $400,000 for this. That's pretty amazing. And I would tell you this, it's beautifully done. So to the Marines who did this, and it's now sitting at San Mateo, and holy shit, man. It is absolutely gorgeous, and it's their place. that honors their sacrifice, their courage. And I just can't to guys like Nick War and who helped raise this money. Well done, boys and girls, because holy shit, this thing is incredible. And it's in a very, very special, if you've ever been part of the 5th Marine Regiment, it's in a very special place, which is the Memorial Garden and, at San Mateo. And, this is the first picture I've seen of it live. Wow.
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
I may have to go out there.
Yeah.
I may have to violate my rule.
We'll declare it. As long as you hang out in Orange County, Orange County now is identified, you know, with the lawsuit. They're on board. City of Newport Beach just got on board, right? So you can, as long as you stay in Orange County, you know, you'll be okay. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, we started the conversation with talking about Jeremiah Workman, and the struggle. Nobody personifies that struggle more than Vietnam veterans. And what they've gone through with no help, and them getting told to just stuff it in, keep those monkeys in the closet, and don't go near the door, and that's how they lived with it, and
right,
and so they're an example to all of us of perseverance through whatever you may struggle with, but again to their dedication to their comrades is honestly amazing. And this thing is a beautiful, beautiful, and I'll tell you what, it's not small either. It's huge. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like kind of limestone or light panels with lighting and dark writing on them, and then the centerpiece that Mike described, a pedestal with the Marine Corps emblem, 5th Marines emblem, 1st Marine Division emblem, and then what it's designed, they told me the way they wanted to design it so at night it would look like it was hovering in black above, and that is the soldier's cross. It would be in white etchings, lit appropriately, in black onyx. And so it would look like it would be floating above the rest of that cross. So, but it's beautiful. So, anyway. All right, man, what else are you doing today?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. I think we're starting the
landscaping.
Freaking, yeah.
Nice. All right.
I don't know. We'll see, man.
What are you? Are you in charge of? It's a little bit windy though. You got a fire hazard also in the county.
Yeah, so it's dry. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
All right.
It's dry today. So.
Right. Are you in
I won't be lighting any fire.
Are you in charge of going and getting the plants, or is that something Tina does? Do you guys both do that, or who decides?
No, it's a mutual decision.
Right.
Well, yeah, she wants plants that will probably not make it. She wants color. And it's like, I try and explain to her, like, every plant is usually green. What, I don't know where you're talking about color.
She means flowers. Flowers, right?
No, we don't. Mac, we got like 7 rose bushes that require a lot of pruning.
Yes. Who prunes them?
And both of us. But, you know, I do it smartly because I wear gloves because thorns have roses. The other half doesn't wear gloves, gets thorns everything in her hands every single time, and then comes in complaining. And I tell her, well, where's your gloves? I didn't have time to put them on. I don't have time to sit here and talk about logic with you either. So, I lose. But yeah, we're going to go after her. Knock it out.
All right. Look, good luck today.
Yes. Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow, though.
Oh, you'll probably talk to me tonight.
Oh, that's right.
No, everybody's been
cordial.
During the ass whooping, as one might expect, I went River City, and then I was being taunted. Yeah, by Napa Man, who's got no dog in the fight. Napa Man starts taunting me. Well, where's Mac? What's the score?
And he's a Giants fan, and they're like, what, dead last place?
No, they're doing. You know who's a good baseball player? Is that guy the Giants got from Pittsburgh? Lawrence McCutcheon. He was a football player, but his last name's McCutcheon. What's his first name? Is it Lawrence McCutcheon?
I don't know. He's
evidently a really good citizen, and he's a pretty good baseball player too. So anyway. All right, Mike.
The Twins are doing good too, though, this year.
You're not a Twins fan. You resigned all things affiliated with Minnesota.
No, I'm throwing out. Like, the Twins are doing pretty good. Twins are in first place in their conference.
They have a good young baseball team. Baseball's got a lot of good young baseball teams, which is fun.
Yeah, they do.
So if you're a baseball fan, it's a fun time because there's more young talent in the big leagues than I've ever seen. I think of my life, and it's really good. And then you have rivalries like the Red Sox Yankees just got better last night. So always fun.
Right.
So anyway, all right, man, have a good one.
All right, I'll talk later.
Go Yankees.
Go Sox. Bye.
I was trying to see if he would be paying attention, and he's like, "Yep, got it. Go." Then I would keep that forever and and play it all the time. Let me, I will post the picture that my son sent me. Now, honestly, it's gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful. I'll close the show, cause somebody requested this, and I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but I couldn't find it, but I found it. And I'm gonna use the names, I don't give a shit. This is Luke's mom. I listened to your Monday show this morning. When I heard you read the Marine's email about PTSD, I felt such a connection. Now I know it was my Luke's email. I want to add to Luke's gratitude. It has been and continues to be a long road home from Fallujah for Luke and many others. I believe your program is helping him more than any meds, liquor, or counseling ever did. God bless you and your crew. Or should I say tribe? Love and prayers from a grateful mom. And, you know, what's important, and I think why that email is so cool, is, you know, we talk about special trust and confidence. What it is to be a leader in the Marine Corps. You know, and Bob Nielsen's a great example of it. A lifetime spent honoring the courage and commitment of Marines that you were privileged enough at one time in your life to lead and never getting over the experience. And so, you know, Gunner, myself, Montana Man, Napa Man, F-18, all these guys that you hear on this program are all scarred by that experience. And we would never quit on our tribe. We're just not raised to do that. And so, but the other thing we know is we walk in, you know, the footprints of incredible people. And I will tell you, the lesson today, and I'll post this picture, and when you see it, it's breathtaking. It's taken at night of the 5th Marines Vietnam Memorial. And honestly, it's absolutely beautiful. 47 years after the fact, I want to say they started raising money. That's how deep that scar is. That's how deep that bond is. That's how deep that commitment is, to never forget. And so, on this little radio program, we only do what others have taught us to do. And we're tremendously, as young guys, we're tremendously mindful of the example that's been set for us by Marine Corps veterans throughout Marine Corps history. And not only in war, but in peace. The example they've set for us, the way they've taken care of each other, the way they live up to the word Semper Fidelis, and the way they live up to the special trust and confidence piece of it. You know, Nick Ward got involved in this stuff. And he told the story, but he went to Mississippi, a member of, I want to say his platoon, was awarded the Medal of Honor, if I'm not mistaken, for jumping on a grenade. I think that's how the story goes. He chose to be buried, not in Arlington, but at his home. But back in the day, where he's from, I want to say it's in Mississippi, there was a black cemetery. There was not an integrated cemetery. The black cemetery went into receivership and was not taken care of. And so when he went to visit this grave, he couldn't find it because it was overgrown. And so he told his platoon about it and his fellow Marines. And so they raised some money to put up a sign, to clean the place up and whatnot. And so, that's the example. And then from that, you see other members, Nick War among them, but raise $400,000 45 years later to put something like this up. So we follow them, as we have most of our lives. They taught us when we were young guys, and we continue to follow their examples. Guys like Nick War, guys like Bob Nielsen, who are quintessential Marines because they've spent a whole lifetime taking care of other Marines. So with that said, have a great afternoon. This show repeats itself very proudly in a great spirit here, and I don't know. It's just I can't say enough of the men and women I've been privileged to meet in my life that exemplify what special trust and confidence is. And as I said, as a captain at IOC when I would teach this class, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with Congress at all. It has to do with the commitment you feel to the families and the dependents of the Marines entrusted to you. That's what special trust and confidence is, that you will do whatever you can to make sure that they come back home alive, safe and sound, and then later on in life, that you continue to do what you can to help them live better life, to live the high life, which is why this song plays at the end of The High Life. Yeah, to live, help them live better. That's why this plays at the end of the program. So anyway, very cool to be a part of this tribe. Had I my druthers, I would choose no other tribe. It's the best. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow. The chef will join us tomorrow. And we're going to do another installment of the whole Syrian thing. So we'll continue the Syrian education. As I believe that there's going to be the next big war on this planet will be in Syria. So, with that said, have a great one. Raise your kids to be better. Out.